Welcome to the Brian D. O'Leary Show. This is your home for serious content amidst an unserious world.
All right, and welcome back to the Brian D. O'Leary Show. Been a while, been busy. Today, I have for you, if you haven't been getting the emails, well, get on the email list. Just go to briandoleary.com. You can hop on our email list there. But what I have for you today, well, they said I've been sending emails out that I've been working on this other podcast. It's called the Natural Order Podcast. I do it with my friend Adam Heyman, and we have put out a few episodes already, and I guess this is really the hard launch, so-called, of the podcast, the Natural Order Podcast. So I'm going to release it officially. It's been leaking out here and there, but I'm going to release it officially here right now with episode one on the Brian D. O'Leary Show. And we also have an episode zero, kind of a trailer. You can go back and check that out. And if you want to kind of know what we're all about, kind of dive into it, episode one. And then we also have an episode two out, and then episode three should be out soon enough. We got a few in the few ready to go, but we're going to drop those as we see fit. Not going to give you too much to chew on right at the beginning. The feedback was such that don't do that to us, is what I heard some people say. Don't do it to us. Just one at a time, please. Well, we're doing two at a time. Really, technically three, but you only have to listen to one at a time. Anyway, so they're out, or they're going to be out. Episode one will follow here. And I would just direct you toward naturalorderpodcast.com. And there's also a link there on my website, briandoleary.com. So, without any further ado, I will send you off with first episode of the Natural Order Podcast.
Welcome to the Natural Order Podcast with your hosts, Brian O'Leary and Adam Heyman.
Hello, and welcome to the Natural Order Podcast. My name is Adam Heyman. I'm here with my co-host, Brian D. O'Leary. Say hi, Brian.
You can just call me Brian O'Leary. It's fine. I use that as a way to differentiate myself from a very common name.
So, it is a very common name, but this is a very uncommon podcast.
Yes.
And I thought, Brian, that on this, the inaugural episode, we would sort of rehash a conversation you and I have had off air. The whole point of our conversations going forward is to examine humanity, our world, from the standpoint of the concept of natural order.
Yeah.
And the pillars, as we discussed, upon which we look at this thing is history, economics, evolution, specifically evolutionary psychology, and perhaps most importantly, political philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems like a pretty good and important lens.
Yeah.
We think that there is such a thing as a natural order, that humans are a specific creature, and that some things are bad, poisonous for us, and other things are good and help us thrive.
I think a lot of things.
Evil, for sure. Damn near everything. But it's the last one that I think we'll talk about today. It'll be a good launching off point, and that's the political philosophy aspect. I've been a libertarian, small l, for over 30 years. And joined the Libertarian Party here 3 or 4 years ago. And you, I don't think you are associated with libertarianism specifically, and definitely not with the party.
No.
And you had some interesting questions about libertarianism as a party and as a thread in political philosophy through the ages. And I thought we would just start things off by talking about that.
Yeah, I think over the last pretty close to two decades, I've been somewhat, or certainly amenable, if not probably kind of in the same Venn diagram as a lot of libertarians. I don't necessarily consider myself, and never have really considered myself, a libertarian per se. And certainly this is not another quote unquote liberty or libertarian podcast, because God knows there's
too many
of those out there. I think we want to address things in a more, in a bigger nature. But I would say that a lot of the ideas and political philosophy I do hold from a lot of great libertarian thinkers or people who identify themselves as libertarians. Tom Woods has turned me on to Murray Rothbard and, you know, that whole thing, which is, you know, all, both political philosophy and economic philosophy, which we'll get into another day. But
for sure. Yeah. I know a lot of prominent libertarians have come from both the left and the right side of the political aisle. Your history is more conservative, if I'm guessing correctly.
Yeah, I would say that, I mean, reflexively, I would tend to what you call conservatism, although sure. I didn't know it. You know, it probably stems from my utter hatred of Bill Clinton in 1992, but I was just in high school, and I didn't know much about political philosophy because I grew up in a house where it's like you weren't allowed to have those opinions. You weren't allowed to discuss these opinions because we keep our votes secret and we don't tell anybody. Like, there was no discussion about that around my house, and so I had to find out about all this stuff. And the more and more I started learning on my own, because I'm a very curious guy, the more and more I find out that, you know, the whole, and I didn't really know or identify it as the left back then, but that the whole idea of the institutional left is a non-starter for me. And then sure. when I get to college, you know, I'm able to start talking about these things with people. You know, I go to school in the Northeast. Nominally, I wouldn't even, not a conservative place, Boston College, but it's just saturated with liberals. I mean, occasionally you find people that hold somewhat ideas. And that was the same year, 1996, I guess, was kind of the beginning of a new presidential cycle. And there was a fella who I knew about from 1992. I watched the speech at the Republican convention because I did that for whatever reason when I was like 12 or whatever it might have been, 15 back then. And Pat Buchanan. And so I started like, oh man, this guy's got some good ideas. Man, I was just like, okay, I stopped talking about it pretty soon thereafter because I just get vilified for, you know, for bringing up these things. So, you know, fast forward another 5-10 years and I start really digging into all this political philosophy stuff. And of course, I'm still kind of on the Buchanan train. I've rooted for him and voted for him actually in the 2000 election. But then he had a magazine called The American Conservative. And that in turn turned me on to a guy named Tom Woods. And as Tom was an editor and he had some great articles. And so I really got into, I never heard of Ludwig von Mises, Murray Rothbard, Austrian economics, never heard of any of this stuff. And maybe some of our folks haven't heard of them either, but we're here to kind of spread the gospel. Yeah,
don't worry, Brian. Over time, they yeah. will.
So anyway, that's kind of where I come from.
Let me give my own backstory. Mm-hmm. When I was younger, growing up, I didn't come from a political household at all. Mm-hmm. The subject just never was raised, as far as I remember anyway. But nevertheless, the culture, TV, music, movies, is such that I just assumed I was sort of a leftist because those are the nice guys, right?
Yeah.
It's evil businessmen and religious zealots that are on the right. Sure. I mean, I'm not a douchebag. I must be a leftist. Yeah. And then somewhere, I guess as I was starting to go into college, I had the epiphany that all these left-leaning government programs are financed by money that's stolen from other people. And I just had a reflexive prick to my sense of justice that that's just not right. Mm-hmm. So I immediately decided, well, I must be on the right. And at that time, it must have been 88, 89, Rush Limbaugh was a very popular person. So I thought, well, I'll just listen to this guy. This must be what I'm all about. Mm-hmm. And a few months later, I'm like, well, nope, I'm sure as hell not one of those either. Because he's got all sorts of evil, horrible things he wants to do with government power and stolen money. And I didn't have a name for the feeling I was feeling, but I didn't like that either.
Right.
He sure had a penchant for wanting to order people around just as much as a leftist did and steal a bunch of money and wage war. Well, anyway, then I read, it must have been 1990, I read The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand. And it was like a crystalline lattice in my brain just shifted right into place. Everything lined up. So then I read Atlas Shrugged and then everything I could find by her, including her nonfiction. And even though she was loath to ever carry the libertarian label, she clearly was a libertarian. And I just took off from there, reading every libertarian thinker I could find. And so, yeah, I believe the libertarian political philosophy is the proper philosophy that will allow mankind to thrive. And so I hope today we'll talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. But I think we should probably define what that is, because as you said, Ayn Rand.
Rhymes with mine as okay.
Honestly not read any of her stuff, but...
Oh, she's delightful.
You should. I know. I've been told I should read The Fountainhead first, just like you did.
Yes, it's a better novel. Well, they're both great novels, but it's a better novel.
And so, but anyway, she was, like you said, loath to call herself libertarian. I'm not loath to it. I just kind of feel I don't know. I mean, I there's all these labels, and it's not that I don't want to be labeled. It's just like none of them quite fit where I'm at, and I think this show is going to be one of those things.
We'll flesh all of that out.
But I think first what we need to do is define the libertarian political philosophy and kind of juxtapose that with people who call themselves libertarian.
For sure. Well, let's start as far back as we can think, at least in broad strokes. A lot of people have argued that there's really only two political philosophies, liberty on the one hand and power on the other. Mm. And everything else is just a splicing together of various features of those things. Mm-hmm. Does the individual have the right to decide things for himself, or is he obliged to follow orders from some person or group of people? And so all throughout history, from ancient Chinese to the Greeks to the Romans to everything in between, there's been a lot of threads of political thought that try to touch on this subject and argue for what individual rights are, why they're important. To this end, there's a magnificent book by Professor Gerard Casey out of Ireland called Freedom's Progress with a question mark. Freedom's Progress? And the title accentuates the fact that despite the Marxist framework, we don't exist in a long march of consistently upwards progression in human freedom or human progress. It's just not the case. So we have countervailing instincts to freedom. Groupishness, appeals to authority, desire for security and someone to provide it, a desire for some other group or person to provide for our daily sustenance. We've got lots of
things. Franklin who famously said that in the American context?
Yeah, him and several others. There's a blurb I'm getting from the Amazon website about Gerard Casey's book here, and I wanted to read it just because it will lay a nice foundation. In Freedom's Progress, Gerard Casey argues that the progress of freedom has largely consisted in an intermittent and imperfect transition from tribalism to individualism, from the primacy of the collective to the fragile centrality of the individual person and of freedom. Such a transition is, he argued, neither automatic nor complete, nor are relapses to tribalism impossible. The reason for the fragility of freedom is simple. The importance of individual freedom is simply not obvious to everyone. Most people want security in this world, not liberty.
Yeah.
Libertarians, writes Max Eastman, used to tell us that the love of freedom is the strongest of political motives, but recent events have taught us the extravagance of this opinion. The quote-unquote herd instinct and the yearning for paternal authority are often as strong. Indeed, the tendency of men to gang up under a leader and submit to his will is, of all political traits, the best attested by history. The charm of the collective exercises a perennial magnetic attraction for the human spirit. In the 20th century, fascism, Bolshevism, and National Socialism were, Casey argues, each of them a return to tribalism in one form or another, and many aspects of our current warfare states, continue to embody tribalist impulses. And as we sit here, Brian, in 2023, I think you will recognize a whole bunch of those tribal impulses in our current political environment.
Yeah, that's for sure. To some degree, I sympathize with the tribalism because the tribe is your people, right?
Sure.
But if you had to kind of take it from the top and construct a political philosophy, a political framework or a societal framework, sui generis, wiping the slate is wiped clean. I think you're definitely on the right track. with the libertarian ideals. The problem we have is that we live in a world with just totally diverse traditions and cultures, and getting people on board with a totally rational and a commonsensical approach to how you approach your politics or your interactions with other fellow human beings. It's like, it's bizarre for most people. And
let's dig into that. Yeah. Let's dig into that, because I think the central pivot point is as follows. As you said, you know, it's appealing to belong to a tribe. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously no man is an island. It's completely in our nature to be groupish, to band together. Mm-hmm. But the key essential point is that association and all the wonderful things that come from humans banding together under common cause, is that association voluntary or is it coerced? The central argument, the bickering between the left and the right in 2023 America and in all of human society, is, are you willing to form free associations, or are you compelled to order your fellow man to behave in a way that he does not want to because you think you have some magnet from heaven, some authority given to you by who knows what, that allows you to push other people around, steal their money, and if they disobey you, throw them in a cage or kill them?
Yeah.
It's the voluntary nature of these things that is the crucial question.
Right. And like you say, free association, and that is kind of the natural order, which stems from natural law. And that's kind of that's why we decided on the name for the podcast, because the natural order stemmed from natural law does not allow for this involuntary coercion of human beings amongst other, whether it be a tribe or not, right?
Thousands of years ago, when people were first starting to think along these lines, they were railing against whatever the authority was in their region, a king or an emperor or who knows what. And they're appealing to almost a religious idea that there is a natural law higher than whatever despotic edicts they happen to live under.
Yeah.
And if you're a religious sort of a person, you say that comes from God. Mm-hmm. And if you're more of an atheist like myself, you are trying to discover the natural order that is appropriate for what our species is, a human being, a sentient, rational, for the most part, driven creature.
Yeah. So, yeah, this brings to mind, I think we were kind of wanted to talk about it. Like, so within this libertarian spectrum, I guess, you have tons of people who call themselves libertarian, but you say like libertarian quickly, like in a couple sentences, what is libertarianism? The political philosophy, not the party. And we'll get into that in a second.
Right. We'll get to the party in a bit. But libertarianism is, it's a little bit of a slippery concept because there are different strands of it. Mm-hmm. But it is in general the tendency to think that individual rights, that it is right for individuals to have freedom, that they, for them not to be ordered around by somebody else. And part of the philosophy involves something called non-aggression principle,
right?
Which is simply an application of property rights, which is really the foundation of all libertarian philosophy, is that you own yourself. This should be axiomatic almost. Mm-hmm. Certainly no other person has a higher claim to you than you do. And then, as we'll go into probably on future shows, there is a long tradition of property rights theory. What is it for you to come to justly acquire property? And then the natural order that springs up from free people freely associating, making exchanges with their justly acquired property, is what causes humans to flourish, for all civilization to rise up. And there are a lot of different, again, a lot of different strands of this, a lot of different philosophical justifications. But the essence is that you are and should be free. You are and should have the right to own stuff and exchange it with other people or not as you see fit. And no matter how screwed up your decisions may be, no other person or group of people has a better claim on your autonomy and your behavior than you do. To the extent, obviously, that you don't interfere in that same right of other people, which is why libertarian rights theory is often called a negative right rather than a positive right. You don't have a right to X, Y, and Z. What
you
is
have a right
other
from?
People just have a right to, yes, to be excluded from your aggression, whatever it is. Mm. And as you look around to our current climate, every aspect of our current politics, our current government action, betrays this principle.
Sure.
If we, to the extent that we ever held true to it, and we did too, kind of, in the early founding of this country, kind of.
Yeah.
But we've deviated far, far, far afield.
Yeah, and I was going to say, it reminds me of the ideal of the Declaration of Independence, right, or the Constitution or whatever, where it was imperative that you had a Bill of Rights so that these rights could not be put upon you, that you as a person or a state in some cases, or the polity of the individual state, they're not subject to the whims, I guess, of the central government.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And let me plant a flag. We won't be able to explore this point in this episode, but a lot of people, the non-aggression principle gets a really bad rap because people will look at it and say, okay, well, you have the right to do whatever you want as long as you don't harm anybody else or their property. And they're like, well, that just doesn't answer any specific questions. You know, what actually is harming another person? You know, if I start a new business across the street and I take all your customers, I've harmed you, but I'm not committing any rights violations, you know, so what the hell is that? Right. What if I'm spurned by a lover? You know, she's harmed me. Is that not allowed? And on its face, you might guess that that's sort of a stupid objection, but it does illustrate something that is important, which is that the non-aggression principle, like all other principles of justice, is just that, a principle.
Mm.
For it to gain traction in the real world and be useful to us, you have to apply the principle to the specific context that we're talking about.
But it's generally kind of the way most people approach their life, isn't it?
Sure. I mean, yeah, it has to
don't,
be because that's where life is lived.
It's like, tell my kid, don't hit. You're aggressing against your sister, your brother.
Yeah. When people ask me in an elevator what it is, I say libertarianism is don't hit people and don't take their stuff. Yeah, you know, sure. It's the first rule of morality we had.
Yeah.
You have to become old and sophisticated to think that, oh, that's just childish. They're perfectly good reasons why we should hit people and take their stuff. So we could speak for years on the history of the principles of libertarianism, but I think you want to delve into libertarianism now.
Yeah.
The party, well, who calls themselves libertarians. Oh, we should mention that libertarianism came from the left as a reaction against the authority of monarchs and other governmental bodies. Oh, and religions, I should say. And in Europe.
In the form of classical liberalism, right?
Classical liberalism, yes. They still use the word liberalism.
They actually called themselves liberals back then. And now we call them classical liberalism.
It's a definitional thing the old country. Mm-hmm. Liberal means libertarian. Mm-hmm. They never use that word. And in America, the word liberal got co-opted by leftist policies and left-oriented people. So a new word was required.
Yes. Well, it's kind of the way conservatism is going to some degree these days. I mean, just the whole aspect of, I like the tradition of, say, Russell Kirk and how he had this huge tome, probably got around here somewhere, but he defined conservatism, but that is a far cry from what we have today in quote unquote conservative movement or conservative ink or whatever. And
I don't think Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, or Mitt Romney have read any Kirk.
No, and I this is maybe a bit of an aside as we're kind of comparing the classical liberalism versus the monarchical system. Some folks will say that the American Revolution was a libertarian revolution. You can argue probably on either side relatively effectively for that. I don't know that I agree because I don't think that philosophy was particularly in place. But if you look at it in today's lens, you got a shot. But
well, look, what's the first question of economics compared to what?
Yeah.
Compared to the monarchy in England.
Yeah.
It sure as hell was a libertarian revolution. Absolutely.
Yeah, but what I say is that then you have these factions in the founding of America. You have essentially the Jeffersonian and the Hamiltonian.
Yeah.
In today's world, I would take both of those people over what we have today. Now, there's this kind of libertarian strain would be like, oh yeah, we're Jeffersonians and Jeffersonians only, screw Hamilton. And there's a kind of this old stock kind of conservatism that really liked Hamilton. In today's world, it's all messed up because we have this super woke play going on that is called Hamilton, that like they pick apart parts of Hamilton's life that I don't know, but whatever. I mean, that's...
Dude, this is a digression, and we could spend several episodes on this issue alone, but I got to tell you, that play, I have 100 reasons to hate it, that musical, and it's great.
Oh, I
absolutely love it. It's wonderful.
Wow.
It's really good.
Yeah, I started watching it.
I don't like rap music specifically. Yeah. I think choosing Black and Latino characters just because is sort of an offensive idea, but... Oh, and they get lots of the history just wrong. I mean, well, sometimes on purpose, just because it fit the narrative better. And Lin-Manuel Miranda admits as much, but I got to tell you, that damn thing is great. It's great.
Oh, yeah. I have to disagree. I couldn't finish it. But anyway, so my point being is that I'd rather have, you know, you have these two branches of American political philosophy that stemmed from the Revolution. I'd have a hard time choosing which one I would want today because both would be better than what we have from either kind of wing of the same bird of prey today, I guess.
I strongly suspect if Alexander Hamilton found a time machine and plopped himself here today, he would look around and immediately start giving speeches against the points he was making back then.
Perhaps.
Because that centralization of government power led to things that I'm sure he finds just horrific.
Yeah. But I guess all this stems to what we're talking about as far as the libertarian and libertarian political party and the libertarian movement. Because you have, like you said, libertarian may have stemmed from libertarianism, stemmed somewhat from the left. But then you have pretty right-wing libertarians and then super left-wing people that I think that you said it was just like they're left-wing radical Democrats that like guns.
Yeah. Well, before we get to the Libertarian Party and the wide variety of interesting people that are in it, this might be a good time to draw a distinction between pure libertarianism, which I would argue is thin, by which I mean it only is a political philosophy that has to do with the proper role of the use of force in society and what implications that has for government in size and scope, versus a thick notion of libertarianism, which, to give them their best argument, to steel man it, I think they would say it's from a an instinct to reject all forms of authority, no matter where they come from. So they tend to just like individual freedom, even if you or I might think, you know, this isn't state power, this is just a church or a private association or a family or peer pressure. So a thick libertarian, which tend to be left-leaning, think not only should we advocate for the government not to be involved in the drug war or throwing gay people in jail for whatever sin they think they're committing, or throw prostitutes in jail, not only a thick libertarian who's left-leaning would think not only should we not have the government involved in that because it's a bigger harm, but that we should celebrate drug use and sex work and, you know, just whatever. And that's not I don't think that's the case at all. That's crazy.
Right.
I don't want the government to see a guy smoking a joint or doing heroin and throw him in a cage. I don't think that makes society better. But that doesn't mean I think it's a great idea for everybody to be stoned all day. Right. It's not good.
Right.
You're not going to thrive if you do that. It's just that nobody has a right to tell you not to, as long as you're not, you know, stealing to finance your habit or whatever, you know, violating someone else's person or property. But that doesn't mean that, you know, just because something should be legal, that nobody else has a right to put you in a cage if you do it. That doesn't mean that we should endorse these things necessarily.
And
we shouldn't. That's an entirely separate question.
Yeah, and I think this kind of fissure or maybe cleaving of the kind of libertarian movement that I knew from like the first part of my exposure happened like, what I want to say, like 5-8 years ago, where the real distinction between thick and thin, which I still like, you made, I didn't understand it really until you kind of talked about it there. It's like, what are you talking about, thick and thin? Like, but anyway, but
it's really important because most people just adopt the thick version. Even people on the right, they adopt it reflexively because a person's entire philosophy is much, much bigger than what they think about politics.
And I think
a political philosophy, to be understood, has to be narrow. If it's not narrow, it's not a political philosophy anymore.
Okay. Yeah. And I think what you're saying is that I have friends that say they're libertarian. I guess this is where we wanted to go with this show, a long way of doing it. Say they're libertarian because they basically believe the government is too big, essentially. Or people on the left say, or kind of semi-left leaning, like might say, like, oh yeah, I advocate all the Democrat positions, plus I like guns. Or it's like I'm economically conservative, socially liberal. And that's probably the most common thing outside of what you would.
Well,
you
don't leave out the right wing version of that first one. Uh-huh. I'm a right winger who likes to smoke weed.
Right. Right. Yeah. Gary Johnson claims, like, oh yeah, he's a Republican that advocates drug use. I mean, he's thick in your definition because he like celebrates.
But he doesn't understand.
No.
Like all of these policy positions, they're not just random. Mm-hmm. We are socially liberal simply because only from the government perspective. Mm-hmm. We don't believe anybody, even if he was elected mayor, mm-hmm. has a right to tell you what to do with your body, mm-hmm. with your free associations, because you own those. Mm-hmm. That's why you get to make those mm-hmm. decisions. And we're economic or fiscally conservative for the exact same principle. That's your money. Nobody else has a right to steal it from you and use it for some other purposes. Whether those purposes are left-leaning or right-leaning, mm-hmm. does not matter. The principle is stealing wrong.
Yeah.
And we invent all sorts of pseudo-intellectual tricks to make us think that, oh, no, it's not wrong at all. No, there's a national interest or there's a public good argument.
What about the roads, Adam? What about the roads?
What about the damn roads? I mean, you've got people over here and things over here, and how on God's green earth are we going to find a way to get the one thing to the other thing?
Yeah.
I mean, you obviously have to have government.
Yeah.
And in future episodes, we'll delve into things like that.
Well, we might as well just take a break right here and pick this up in the next show, I think, because
all right. So this has been, that's a good idea, Brian. This has been the history and the philosophical underpinnings of libertarianism. And in the next episode, let's start to delve into the menagerie that is the Libertarian Party.
You bet. All right. We'll see you next time, Adam. And for more, head on over to naturalorderpodcast.com. Wouldn't you rather be a hammer than a nail? Yes, I think you would. If you only could, you surely would. That's where Tom Wood's Liberty Classroom comes in. You will now be the hammer. Get the equivalent of a PhD in libertarian thought and free market economics, all for less than $8 a month. Liberty Classroom is the premier, what we call a dashboard university. You can attend while sitting in front of your computer, on a road trip, or simply driving around town. Go to briandoleary.com/liberty to sign up today.